What happens when a spoiled, angry teenager slurps down a raw oyster on a French fishing boat and discovers his entire future in that single briny moment? Anthony Bourdain's journey from rebellious college dropout to culinary legend begins with this transformative bite, a taste of seawater, flesh, and possibility that would shape decades of obsession. Before he became the globe-trotting storyteller we knew from television, Bourdain was just another line cook with scarred hands and a drug problem, navigating the brutal, profane, and strangely beautiful world behind restaurant kitchen doors. His 2000 memoir didn't just chronicle a chef's life, it detonated a truth bomb that forever changed how we think about the people who cook our food. Enrollment in culinary schools spiked after publication, even as diners grew wary of Monday fish specials and hollandaise sauce. This wasn't sanitized Food Network fantasy. It was raw, honest, and utterly captivating. Who's really preparing that Instagram-worthy dish? Not the pristine-clad chef, but a dysfunctional, mercenary lot of fringe dwellers, often immigrants, who clawed up from dishwashing. These cooks fall into three tribes: the artists, high-maintenance specialists needing constant validation, the exiles, those who can't function in normal society, and the mercenaries, professionals who show up, execute flawlessly, and collect their check. Bourdain preferred the latter. Give him reliability over temperamental genius any day. Line cooking resembles ballet performed at gunpoint. During Saturday rushes, there's no democracy, only chain of command. A cook's mise en place is sacred, an extension of their nervous system. Messy station equals messy mind. The best cooks remain clear-headed while juggling 12 temperatures simultaneously, tuning out screaming chefs and demanding waiters. The physical toll is devastating. Burns, cuts, chronic pain, simply part of the job. Line cooks develop hands so scarred they can grab hot metal without flinching. They stand 12 to 16 hours in sweltering heat until their bodies break down. Bad backs, arthritic hands, varicose veins, alcoholism from self-medicating. Yet they return daily, driven by strange pride in enduring what others cannot. Never order fish on Monday. Most seafood arrives Thursday or Friday, making Monday's fresh catch 4 days old. Those specials? Thursday's leftovers with fancy sauce. One bad mussel triggers violent illness. Sunday brunch seafood is weekend leftovers repackaged. Menu euphemisms like beef parmentier hide old food. Filthy bathrooms signal worse kitchens. Busy restaurants with high turnover offer fresher ingredients. Tuesday through Thursday are optimal. Chefs are rested, working with fresh product. Weekend diners are viewed as one-timers who won't notice corner cutting. Well-done meat? That's where questionable cuts go. Yet Bourdain's philosophy persists. Your body isn't a temple, it's an amusement park. Enjoy the ride. The innovators who discovered foie gras and sushi were daredevils. Eat without fear. Try everything once. The secret to restaurant-quality home cooking? Skip knife sets. Buy one excellent chef's knife. The real magic? Shallots, butter, always first and last in the pan, fresh herbs, and homemade stock reduced to demi-glace. Simple food with quality ingredients separates restaurant cooking from home cooking. Opening a restaurant has terrible odds. Only 1 in 5 see returns. Yet dreamers keep lining up. The retired dentist who throws great dinner parties and imagines himself as Rick from Casablanca, or midlife crisis cases seeking adventure. When business falters, these unprepared owners panic, desperately tinkering until the unmistakable odor of death permeates the dining room. Success demands living on premises for years, working 17-hour days with total involvement in every aspect: Spanish fluency, health codes, tax law, fire regulations, environmental protection, building codes, OSHA, hiring practices, zoning, insurance, liquor licenses, trash removal, grease disposal. Meanwhile, sewage backs up, staff creates legal problems, underage drinking threatens your license, vermin lurk, all while your life savings hang in the balance. The pattern repeats. Owners fall in love with concepts without understanding markets. They design beautiful dining rooms but skimp on kitchen equipment. They hire friends rather than professionals. Within 6 months, they're making desperate moves, changing concepts, slashing prices, firing the chef. The restaurant business rewards only those who control costs fanatically, know their market intimately, and maintain absolute consistency. Between rushes, Bourdain absorbed his crew's banter, an international language of crude insults flowing between his French sous chef, American pastry chef, Mexican line cooks, Bengali runner, and Dominican dishwasher. Kitchen talk follows rigid rules. All comments revolve around involuntary rectal penetration, penis size, or physical flaws. Cabrón can mean your wife is cheating or my brother, depending on tone. Fuck functions as a comma. Suck my dick means hang on a second. This crude environment might seem hostile, but kitchens need people who can hold their station without taking things personally. Your actual sexuality or background doesn't matter. It's how well you handle criticism and dish it back. Kitchens have professional jargon too. 86 means unavailable or fired. Being weeded means you're behind. Mise is mise en place, your setup. Kitchen Spanish is essential. Cachundo, piece of ass, for someone homely. Rayo, flash, for slowpokes. Motherfucker and cocksucker are terms of endearment, though asshole signals genuine anger and family insults are strictly off limits. Bourdain grew to love this crude poetry, the variations on classic insults like jazz riffs. Sunday morning, 8 a.m., Bourdain lies in bed after a brutal Saturday night, hands and feet radiating pain. Lighting his Zippo takes three tries. He examines his hands, the hands he always wanted since a cook named Tyrone taunted him years ago. The inch-and-a-half diagonal callus at the base of his right forefinger, yellowish-brown where knife heels have rested, his professional badge. The permanently deformed pinky from poor whisk handling, recent scrapes, punctures, dried animal blood under cuticles, a black bruise under the thumbnail, a beveled-off fingertip from a pepper-cutting accident. 27 years since he walked into the Dreadnought kitchen with hair halfway down his back and a bad attitude. He got the hands he deserved. He loved making cassoulet, chive mashed potatoes with wild mushrooms, perfectly reduced sauces. He loved seeing his boss's face light up at a perfect pot-au-feu. That look of wonder when cynical bastards disappear before a simple plate of food. Food made sense to him in a way people never had. Sometimes a sliced tomato with parsley transported him back to his aunt's garden table in France, the distant sirens, the rooster's call, sand between his toes. He'd left destruction in his wake and closed many restaurants, but his loyal crew showed up daily. Frank, Eddie, Carlos, Omar. His wife Nancy somehow stayed through late nights, drunkenness, and obsession with prep lists. Bourdain showed us the truth. Cooking is brutal, beautiful, and utterly human. It's about scarred hands and aching feet, crude jokes and fierce loyalty, the simple magic of transforming ingredients into something that makes hardened cynics weep. Your next meal carries this hidden story, the immigrant cook who showed up despite the flu, the dishwasher who stayed until 3 a.m. They didn't do it for glory. They did it because food became their entire world, and they wouldn't have missed it for anything.